For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry! Scoops! Corey Perry!
Lillian able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three in the face. One. Score! Off the floor! On the board! Paul Kariya!
All right, we're back. It's a Sunday noon edition. I was trying to remember what time it was. Pacific time. It's a Sunday noon edition of the Forever Mighty podcast. Coming off a game last night where the Ducks lost 4-1 against the New York Rangers. We can call it a makeshift post-game show if we want, because the last game we did a post-game show for, so we only have one game to cover today. We'll talk about it a little bit, some key points from that game. Obviously, Jacob Perreault made his NHL debut. We got a few other topics to get to, including Mason McTavish was traded to another team in the OHL. Ryan Getzlaf should be back for tonight's game. We'll do a little preview of the Ducks' postponed and rescheduled game versus the Detroit Red Wings. And Jacob Chychrun rumors have resurfaced, and we have a few other topics we want to talk about. So we'll get to those in a little bit. As you can see, it's just Steven and I today. I know I had promised, if you saw on social media, a full house of all of us, including Pat and Jason. But unfortunately, Jason's under the weather. He's not feeling too great, so he's out for this one, and Pat had something come up. So it's you're stuck with us again. And if when the guys come back and they find out that the show no longer exists because nobody watches anymore, then they they can blame us. So
what the hell happened? We left you guys a perfectly fine podcast. I don't know what happened.
Yeah,
sorry.
Just went downhill from there.
Yeah, I think technically what this is a between game show, yeah. Right? Because we'll wrap up last night a little bit, look at the Detroit game tonight, and then hit on just some of the key pieces, like you said, that have come around.
This one puts me on the spot now. This means I have to release it after we're done recording today, doesn't it?
Good. Sorry, bud.
Right? I mean, I have to do it, I guess, right? So we'll get it out there for you guys. Everybody who's listening to this, hopefully you can catch it before tonight's game. But a lot of the topics we have to cover kind of extend some broader topics. The first one we should get into is big one for us. Jacob Perreault made his debut last night. Big surprise, too. Wasn't expecting that to happen. Kind of came out of nowhere. Obviously the Ducks are dealing with their own COVID issues right now. A lot of guys, I think 7 players in protocol, or maybe 6 now that Getzlaf was out, but he didn't play last night. And the Gulls have their own COVID issues right now. But coming off a game on Friday where Perreault played for San Diego, he comes up and plays on a line with Zegras and Milano yesterday, played a total of 11:05, I think, and got some first power play time. So a decent debut, a little bit earlier than I expected, but I like that they gave him kind of full reins in a sense. I mean, he didn't play a ton of minutes, but he did get to play with Zegras and Milano and did get to play on the first power play. So it was nice to see him get a pretty good opportunity to come in for his first NHL game.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, this is one of those things that you can dismiss, but also just as easily like read into, I think. But for me, I thought it was really interesting when the graphic came out from the Ducks social media team that technically that was listed as the third line. And the first line was the Lundestrom with Comtois and Terry. And then it was, Steele between the Swedes. And I just thought that was really interesting because I think it kind of hints to a little bit at them wanting to insulate Perreault. Like 11 minutes kind of gets a lot closer to what you think of as a third line player. But like you said, at the same time, they put him on a line with two high-end players who have been producing all year. They put him in an opportunity to where he can play the type of game that he's going to be playing. And it's really interesting, I think, to me, because it's something we've talked about as far as like, you know, the Ducks being hesitant to call up some of their higher skill forwards to play them in bottom six roles. Because there always was that hard fourth line, and then it always seemed to still have the desire for a third checking line kind of a thing. And I think we've kind of seen, well, I think this is emblematic of the changes we've seen within the organization in that way, because they played a top nine. You know what I mean? I mean, from a skill point of view, the third line is probably the Ducks' best line, even with it being Perreault, who's unproven. Just because I think Zegras is so creative.
And the way Zegras and Milano have played this year, right? Like, it's they're two of the Ducks' most dynamic offensive players. I mean, the only one that could rival that is if Getzlaf was in the lineup, then maybe Getzlaf, Terry, and Comtois could be, you know, close to that. But in terms of, like, pure skill and creativity and out-of-the-box thinking and plays, then, yeah, it's always going to be Zegras and Milano, no matter who's with them, to be honest. Even if Nick DeLore is on that line, I think they make up for it enough with the individual skill that they have.
I thought it was nice to see, right? Because we've seen this team switch to a much more open and attacking kind of style. The defense, is more involved in the rush, and they're playing with more speed. And I think seeing like an actual skill top nine is really encouraging. And like, I understand that, like, you know, Silverberg's still more of a two-way guy, and even his defense this year is struggling. But like, theoretically, what they're putting him out there to do is just be, you know, a middle six two-way winger who can pitch in on offense. And, you know, to see that be on your second line, I think that's a great, you know, and that third line is, like I said, all kids. Like, I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I think Sam Steele's looked a little bit better, too, over the last few games that he's played. Like, it's still, again, it's nothing compared to the steps forward we've seen from someone like Troy Terry. But I feel like he's been a bit more engaged and looked a bit more comfortable in that spot. So it's been a relief kind of having that with Zegras coming back and no Getzlaf, that you had Lindstrom, Steele, and Zegras. Yes, I know that the Ducks lost yesterday, but I still think those three lines had their moments throughout the game where they looked pretty decent. I think, you know, in all things considered for Jacob Perreault, it was a pretty decent debut. You know, nothing spectacular. He had a few good chances. I think his best chance, it was Milano, I think, slid a puck across the crease, and Perreault was falling, could have got a backhand on it, and just didn't have his balance behind him to put it in the back of the net. And then Zegras one-timed the puck into an empty net and created a scrum, which was a lot of fun to see that happen. Then I think 10 minutes later, he tried the flip from behind the net again. Which didn't go over too well with some of the Rangers players. I know he's going to get shit about that too, because his family is Rangers fans. So for him, not only shooting that into the empty net and then also attempting that against his family's favorite team, you know, he got a text from his dad after the game to tell him take it easy on the Rangers.
Yeah, no, that's so fun, you know, to have that kind of stuff and to see like Jacob Perreault's parents were able to be in the building last night for his game. And you know, like you said, it was a little bit of a late notice as far as him getting in. So it was really nice to see. And hopefully we'll see if we get Dostal tonight.
That's the one thing I wanted to get into, too, is not only Dostal, but apparently Brandon Tracy's also been recalled by the Ducks per the AHL transactions page. So I know Perreault and Tracy played Friday, or I think so. And then Tracy played last night for the goals and had a goal and an assist. I doubt he plays today. Like, I know Perreault was sent back and it didn't, you know, it made sense because why would you play a kid three games in three nights? Like, that's a lot of hockey to be playing. I would love to see Tracy get in tonight. I don't think it is. Maybe it's a plan for next week. I think the Ducks play Tuesday at home against Pittsburgh, so maybe it's a plan to have him come up for that. But when you look at the roster, like, if Getzlaff is coming back tonight, Perreault was out, you know, the top six or top nine essentially would remain the same. It would just be Getzlaff coming in for Perreault. Getzlaff would likely slot back on that top line with Comtois and Terry. Steele probably goes down and drops down a little bit. And then you could have Lindstrom, Raquel, Silverberg, and then just depends on who you want to play with Milano and Zegras at that point. And maybe that's Braden Tracy jumping in there, and it's Benoit Lavigueux who drops out. It'd be interesting to see how that goes tonight. But yeah, Lucas Dostal will be another interesting story. It could be three debuts in two nights for the Ducks if it's Perreault, Tracy, and Dostal who all get in.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. That would be pretty just exciting, you know, especially kind of in the middle of a bit of a lull in the Ducks play. They haven't been playing well the last, I don't know, week and a half, I guess.
Yeah.
2 weeks. And so, you know, to give something like that, kind of also try to inject a little extra free energy into the building and into the lineup with kids. And, you know, Tracy is a bit more of a physical player than Perreault is. So, you know, maybe he jumps in and on like Tuesday or something and, you know, just kind of gets involved that way and kind of makes his presence known, kind of like how Comtois and McTavish did early on. I don't want to necessarily compare them, but just like as far as the physicality being the way that they would get themselves into the game.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. It's fun, though. I mean, look, the reality of it is the best part about the game tonight is it's probably the finalists for the Calder Trophy.
Yeah, the three of them, right?
Michael Bunting sneaks in.
It's Sider, Raymond, and Zegras.
Yeah, I mean, unless Bunting sneaks in, right? And he, you know, because he's produced pretty well, and he's got the Toronto behind him part, so.
Yeah, he's got the East Coast voters, right? So.
Yeah, you know, and he's playing on a line with Matthews right now. It, you know, narratively, there's enough to talk about him being impressive, and, you know, he's playing well. I don't think he's in the same category as those three just because of how special they've played. You know, and I think if there's going to be a spoiler, I do think it might be Sider, just because to come in at his age and basically walk in and become the Detroit's best defenseman as a rookie is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's been pretty unbelievable what Sider's been able to do. I mean, I saw a move yesterday where he deked around one of the defenders and basically had a full up the ice rush and almost scored. Like, he has been just as good, if not better, but it's hard as a defenseman, right? I am fighting back. I cough so much right now. Oh my God.
That's the kind of good Canadian grit you love to see, folks. He's just powering through it for you guys. But yeah, no, it's going to be awesome. You know, Sider's been able to be of impact on both sides. He's got a ton of physicality to his game. He's made some really big hits. You know, he's got the highlights and the gifts that can get you the kind of consistent attention that helps you kind of compete for awards now, because, you know, the way that just social media and just regular media in general, like, this stuff is getting talked about all the time, and you do kind of need to keep your name relevant throughout the year. And I think those three players, more than anybody, have the type of game and the type of impact that they'll be around that conversation all year.
Yeah, and it really has been all three of them for the majority of the year, right? Like, there's been some guys who've kind of jumped into the discussion every now and then. Like, Bunting had the hat trick, I think, in a few good games playing with Matthews and jumped into that discussion. And then Dawson Mercer, when he first came up, had a really good stretch of games. Mm-hmm. He slowed down a little bit, so he entered into that discussion for a bit. But pretty much since the start of the year, it was Raymond and Sider, and then we knew Zegras would eventually get into that discussion, and he had that stretch of play in December, which really vaulted him right back into being the potential favorite for the Calder. So yeah, this is a game the NHL, you knew they quickly wanted to reschedule and have on the cards, because you wouldn't normally think the way Detroit and Anaheim are playing right now would be a big money game, but it is a big money game marketing wise for the NHL to have, you know, the three Calder candidates all playing And it's really the only game, right? Like, there's the game going on now between Dallas and St. Louis. Like, if you want to watch hockey today, you have to watch Zegras, Raymond, and Sider. And that's good for the NHL to have them playing. I mean, you know, the Red Wings, I think most of you probably saw that picture last night after the first period, got outshot 27-1 by the Kings. So it bodes well, potentially, for a wide-open game tonight where the Ducks almost allowed 40 shots on goal last night against the Rangers and only posted 14 themselves. So this could be either a 10-10 shot affair or a really high-scoring game, which I hope is the latter.
Yeah, no, I imagine it'll be, you know, 60-70 shot night just because it's going to be a mess. The other player I was going to say who from the beginning of the season had a chance to be in this conversation and then just based on the way it went with the team, he got sent back was William Eklund. Mm-hmm. He, even early on, I don't know that he was necessarily producing as far as points, but his play was really good. And you could see, you know, I mean, you see all the reasons that we wanted the Ducks to take him, right? He was just, he's just a really dynamic forward. And so, you know, that one was, at this point now, it is just kind of those three. But I think also, you know, if you're the NHL, like, you know, we kind of joked about it, but I think it wouldn't surprise me if the NHL really did call and was be like, no, you can either make sure he plays tonight or we're moving the game to Sunday. And they were like, we'll move the game to Sunday. But is like, Detroit's a tentpole franchise, right? They're one of the most important franchises historically, like for this league. And then on top of that, you've got Anaheim, which has the Orange County market and Southern California market, not to mention, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes away from LA. Like, I just think there's so much potential for these teams to mean something to the league, right? Like, Detroit, when it's going, is a very big deal. And Anaheim, because of the market and, you know, that kind of stuff, it has the potential to be more impactful. And so I think if you're the league, these are exactly the kind of matchups you want. These are, like you said, the kind of things that are important to get out there in front of fans, because, you know, maybe this game doesn't necessarily matter this year, but in 3 years it might be a, you know, it would maybe mean a lot more.
Yeah, and it's always important for the NHL to have at least one of the teams in the smaller markets doing well or having a marketable face. You know, you think now Barkov and Huberto in Florida and Stamkos, Kucherov, Point in Tampa Bay, and the fact that those are two of the best teams in hockey right now. That's huge for the game down there. Obviously, when the Ducks, Kings, and Sharks were at their best a few years ago, that's huge for the NHL to have those teams doing well and having marketable faces. And obviously, Zegras is going to be a big part of that. And you see how the NHL's marketed him this year as, you know, an upcoming young superstar and one of the, you know, the faces of the game, if you want to call it that. I mean, they've been really on that, and for a good reason. The way he's been playing and the flashiness and skill and creativity he's brought to the game is, you know, it's kind of the first time we've seen this in a player's, you know, rookie season. I know he played, you know, 26 games last year, but to have a kid this young and have, you know, less than 50 games or just over 50 games in the NHL and pulling stuff off like this, it's you don't see it too often. So it's great for the NHL to get behind that. And I mean, again, this, I'm excited to see this too, because I haven't watched too many Detroit games. To see Raymond and Sider for, you know, a full 60 minutes, it's exciting to see them too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, as far as the small market thing is considered, right, like, think about how huge it has been to have Nashville be a pretty consistently competitive team for the last 5 or 6 years. You know, we're getting Titans linemen at games, chugging beers and stuff like that. Like, that stuff matters, you know. And even when Arizona made that random run, I think, to the Western Conference Finals, you know, that was kind of a big thing. You know, I think, you know, the Arizona thing is a whole other thing or whatever, but you've also got like Carolina, who's really good right now. Like, there's just a lot of teams in non-traditional hockey markets, right, that are competitive right now. And I think it's really good for the game, especially with, you know, this being the first year it's on ESPN and trying to get more into the national America, you know, US, what do you call it? Like, viewership and stuff like that. You know, I think that's important. But yeah, it'll be fun, you know. So I always like watching Dylan Larkin too. I think he plays with a little bit of a feistiness that surprises me. So it's always fun to watch him play.
I think what could have been if we took him instead of Nick Ritchie.
I mean, yeah. But the one, I mean, at the end of the day, the one that you're pissed about is
Pastor Nick. That's the big one, for sure. That's always going to be the one
that hurts the most.
The one thing I want to talk about before we move on completely from yesterday's game is another really good performance from Anthony Stolarz. He has been all you could ask for, if not more, since the start of the season. And I know when Miller left, the big question mark was who's going to be, you know, step up and help John Gibson out and be the backup goaltender. And, you know, we all knew it was going to be Anthony Stolarz, but had our question marks on would he be able to come in and fulfill that role he really hasn't had consistently in the NHL. And every night he gets in there, works hard, does well, you know, again, allowed 3 goals last night, but you can't really blame him for the ones that ended up going in. And I just, you know, he's done enough to solidify himself as the back of the future for this team. I can't see why you wouldn't want to keep him around. Every time he's in there, he impresses me, he plays well. And it's a nice relief to be able to, you know, when John Gibson is in COVID protocol like this, you know you're going to get a good performance from him no matter what. So it is a bit of a relief from that. And obviously we'll see Dostal tonight, which will be another kind of bonus to see, you know, the up-and-coming young netminder that the Ducks have. But I think Stolarz deserves a lot of credit for what he was able to do to keep the Ducks in it last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stolarz has been one of the most pleasant surprises of this season. In, you know, I mean, at the end of last year, we saw Gibby and Ryan Miller struggle a little bit towards the end of the season, just, you know, from exhaustion and stuff like that. And Miller didn't have a strong season last year to begin with. And we saw Stolarz come in and play a couple of games and he was really good. And, you know, there was a lot of reasons to be excited, but, you know, I personally know that I was very skeptical coming into this year if he was going to be that good again, just because I thought the situation was a little unique as far as, you know, him just kind of stepping in with minimal expectations and the opportunity to kind of shine at the end of the year. And he's been great. He's been absolutely great this year. He's, you know, he's got good size. He moves well. He does all the stuff you kind of want him to do. And he's been a really solid backup, like you said. And I think the thing that's interesting is Eriksson Ek and Dostal are right, the next two guys. And maybe now, what's the kid, Gage Alexander? Yeah. But, you know, Alexander's probably 4, 5, 10 years away, knowing goalies. Yeah. And, you know, Dostal's just barely maybe making his debut tonight, right? So having a guy like Stolarz kind of show up and be a dependable backup to help keep Eriksson Ek or Dostal down in the AHL until they're really ready and play behind Gibson, I think has been great.
Yeah, it's an unexpected plus to having Anthony Stolarz in the system. I mean, you know, when acquired wasn't one that kind of stood out. He was just there for depth in San Diego and to kind of make way until Dostal did come over and until Eriksson Ek was ready to take over a more important role with the Gulls. And it turns out he ends up being, you know, a serviceable NHL backup. It's really good asset management for the Ducks to bring him in. And it, you know, turns out to work in their favor that, you know, he ends up being so good and so valuable for the Ducks. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be a starter. You know, there's a long way to go from the way he's playing and them cherry-picking his starts. And I know every now and then there's ones like this one where he gets in a game where John Gibson is injured or out with in COVID protocol right now. But it still is a relief to have him in there. You know, I think Lucas Dostal is definitely the next in line if anything was ever to happen to John Gibson, if he was to get traded or you know, moved out of the Ducks organization. Dostal's the next in line to be the starter, but, you know, Stolarz does provide a bit of kind of comfort and consistency that you can make that transition a little bit cleaner.
Dude, how much do you think Edmonton wishes they had this version of Stolarz right now?
How many good goalies have they given up on in the last couple of years? Can't be that many.
Let's see. The one for me that, like, and I get why they couldn't, but the one for me is it's hard for me to watch Cam Talbot play pretty well in Minnesota. Yeah. And just be like, dude, you fucking had that guy. I mean, you know, but they ran him into the ground the year that he played the Ducks, or they played the Ducks in the playoffs. He played 72 fucking games that year, man. Like, it was insane.
Yeah, and he was just coming off being a backup in, what, New York, right? Like, and they threw him right into the starting job.
That's
there
right.
Was no... Like, you're okay, you play 20, 30 games a year? Okay, here you go. And I think that year, like, Lundqvist was hurt, so Talbot had to play more. Played, like, 40 games. They're like, okay, now you're going to play 70-plus games for a team that's not as good defensively.
Like, yeah. I mean, because at that point, shit, Stahl and Girard were probably... or Girardi. Yeah. No, What am I? Who am I thinking of?
Yeah, Girardi was there. Yeah,
McDonough.
Yeah, Ryan McDonough. Yeah,
McDonough is
yeah.
who I'm thinking of. You know, I mean that blue line in New York was pretty good. So, you know, and again, now he's playing in Minnesota behind a good blue line, and you know, maybe that's kind of what it is like. The places that just, you know, have had a system that allowed him to play well, he's been good at. And then he had one great year for Edmonton, and that was kind of his outlier year. And he's just, you know, good.
Still better than what they have, right? And
well, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, they fucking got my 50-year-old Mike Smith back there. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Like, that's just not – here's a question. Do you think Ken Holland is the most pissed by this Ducks run? Because if the Ducks were bad, do you think he's calling about Gibby?
Maybe. I still don't think the Ducks, would, no matter how bad they were, if they were bad this year, would trade John Gibson in division to a team like Edmonton, who really that's all they need. You know, a team built around McDavid and Draisaitl, and you get a goaltender who only makes about $6.5 million. Like, that's a... It's a huge relief to a team that is going to have a you know, a window of another 5, 6, 7 years to be good. But he, you know, he's definitely calling on anybody available, I would imagine, right? Like, that's their big and only need. Like, yeah, sure, they could use probably another winger and another defenseman. Every team can. But, you know, I think I saw a rumor that if Price was available, the Oilers would be calling on Carey Price if the Canadiens wanted to sell. I don't know how they would fit that cap in with a $12 million cap for McDavid and whatever Draisaitl makes, which is around 10, if not more, right? So,
no, he makes 8.5.
Okay, so, but, you know, any goaltender that becomes available right now, they're going to be interested. And part of that is finding a team who could probably also take Mikko Koskinen, who makes about $5 million plus, right? So that's been the big thing for them, too, is you know, one good season from Koskinen now has cost them with the contract that he has. And Mike Smith is good when he's healthy, but whenever he's healthy is rarely. You know, he's rarely in the lineup. It's rare that he's ever going to really play for a consistent length of time for the Oilers. So, for you know, I'm happy to see them be bad for as long as they continue to be bad for. I hope they don't find a goaltender, but they're definitely going to be looking. They're going to be one of the most active teams, I would bet, at the deadline.
Yeah. So yeah, Koskinen makes $4.5 million this year, but he's UFA at year end, so that makes him a little bit easier to move. Okay. And you know, he doesn't really like them right now, anyways. So
I thought his contract was worse than that. I thought it was like 5 with like another couple of years left. That's not too bad.
Yeah, I 100% did too. But no, he's fine. You know, I mean, I don't know, man. They just that blue line is terrible. Yeah. It's so bad. But like before the season, right? Would you have done Puljujarvi, Bouchard, and a first for Gibby and probably had to take Koskinen back?
I would have considered it for sure. I think it's a great deal. It's just so tough to give a team like that that's like, you know, that's all they need to be competitive in your own division for the next few years. Like that's a tough sell.
Would you, and then, you know, you would probably have to find a contract to send out the door with it. But would you, if you're, what do you call it? If you're Edmonton, do you call and make that offer for Chychrun?
I wouldn't be surprised if they're looking the like, same, like Bouchard and Pouliot.
Would you give up Bouchard for Chychrun?
That's tough.
Because you know more about Bouchard than I do. I don't know much about him, but you know, he's right-handed and he seems to be, you know, top four kind of guy potentially.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you know, we might as well get into Chychrun now anyway. But you know, the ask, Jeff Merrick was saying the ask the Coyotes want for Chychrun right now is a high end prospect, a young player, and a first round pick. So if you're Edmonton, that's Bouchard, a first round pick, and then probably somebody like Broberg or. Well, it depends if you want to consider Bouchard the high-end prospect or the young player, right? Because he's already in the NHL. He could technically be considered both. But you're looking at one of their top picks from, you know, the recent drafts, like a Broberg or somebody like that, to throw into that deal also. I think for Edmonton, it's probably not the area they should be looking at and using those assets to get in a netminder or a top winger. I think their blue line, it is what it is, at least on the left side with Nurse, is decent, but... If you're Anaheim, you have the assets to do that, and I think you have the spare assets to go out and do that. And you know, we'll play a clip here in a bit, that 50-second clip or so from Jeff Merrick on Hockey Night Canada last night. But you know, the Ducks have the assets to do so, and if Lindholm is heading out in free agency, Yeah, it's a pretty good replacement to bring in as a young 23-year-old on the contract that Chychrun's on.
Yeah, I mean, he's having a great year on a garbage team, man. If you walk him into a team that's competitive, he's definitely someone who's going to be worth the cost. I mean, because he's got, what, two more years on his deal?
I think he's got three after this at 4.6.
Let us check our...
I thought it was two, and then I remember hearing, yeah. I think, Darren Dreger say it was three after this.
Jacob Chychrun, yeah. So he goes into the... it's UFA 2025. And it's got three more years after this at 4.6, which means that could very easily turn into one of the best deals in the league.
Well, yeah, I mean, take this season out of it, and you look at the fact he had 18 goals last year on still a bad Coyotes team.
Leave this season in it. Look how good his defensive numbers have been for that garbage-ass team. Like, I don't think this season is a...
Even his even strength offense has still been not bad. It's the power play's fallen off the wayside because they have literally nobody to put the puck in the back of the net there. He's an obvious bounce-back candidate wherever he goes. He gets put on a better team, he's just going to do better when he's surrounded by better players. Mm-hmm. It's extremely hard for him as a defenseman. There's not too many defensemen who are going to carry play by themselves on a team that has nobody else, right? Like, there's maybe two or three in the entire league who could probably do that. Someone like Kale McCarr. Maybe, you know, Quinn Hughes, like, with the offensive flair to be able to do it themselves. But, yeah, there's definitely not many. But, you know, Jacob Chychrun, when he's in a good situation, when healthy, when ready to play, one of the best young defensemen in the league, and then you take that contract into consideration, and there really isn't too many players better than him that you could go out and acquire right now.
So, in the clip with Merrick, he says that part of it is losing the potential of losing Lindholm in free agency this summer. Given what that Chychrun contract is and how good it is, and that he seems like he could be a top pair defender for the duration of that contract, would you almost be willing to lose or risk losing Lindholm in free agency in order to go into the playoffs with those three down the left-hand side for the Ducks?
I don't think... Okay, I'll get into it. I want to play the clip so everybody has context to what we're talking about, and then I'll get into it. Because I think there's other moves that have to be made. I don't think you can have Chychrun as your five. I think there has to be some corresponding moves. But let's play the clip, and then I'll get into it.
Chychrun of the Arizona Coyotes. So I can confirm that at least 10 teams in the NHL have made inquiries about Jacob Chychrun to various degrees of offers. A couple of offers have given the Arizona Coyotes cause for pause. And I can tell you this is what they are looking for in exchange for Jacob Chychrun. It's not unlike the old Brent Burns deal, which was Devin Setoguchi, Charlie Coyle, and a first-round pick. So what the Coyotes are looking for is a young player, a high-end prospect, plus a first round pick. Now, teams we believe who have the assets who could do that and might be interested include the Los Angeles Kings, perhaps the St. Louis Blues, and certainly the Anaheim Ducks, who might be losing Hampus Lindholm to unrestricted free agency at the end of the season. Also interest in Phil Kessel and Lawson Krause. Boston has always been attached to that name. John Jacob Chychrun of the Arizona Coyotes. So I can confirm.
All right. Sorry, it's looping there. But yeah, I mean, again, covered most of what we said, but wanted to give some reference for that clip. But to answer your question, and having Lindholm, Fowler, Chychrun down the left side, I think if you bring in Chychrun, there has to be a corresponding move from the blue line, whether it is Hampus Lindholm going to another team at the deadline or around the same time of acquiring Chychrun, or if it's Josh Manson. I think the second one's probably a bit more likely, especially if you want to have a bit of a run. I think you could keep Lindholm and Drysdale together. The question becomes, can you really fit Chychrun and Fowler on a pair together? I don't know how that would work. That would be an interesting experiment to see. Or you could treat the 2-3 pairing at that point as, you know, a 2A, 2B, where they play roughly the same amount of minutes, and it's Fowler and, you know, whoever, Fowler and Shattenkirk, or Chychrun and Shattenkirk.
let me ask you this question. It feels to me that we're overthinking this. There's 60 minutes in a hockey game. You could pretty much play all of them 20 minutes a night. They would all – now, that would be down for Fowler and Lindholm, but you can always, you know, mess with that a little bit based on power play time, based on penalty kill time. Like Chychrun probably isn't going to be out there on the penalty kill. Lindholm no longer has to be out there on the power play. So, like, there's ways to kind of offset it with usage, and I just think if you told me that some combination of Fowler, Lindholm, Chychrun – Drysdale, Manson, and Shattenkirk, like, the cap space is there. It's not a cap space issue. That's the thing for me, right? And, like, if that's what you're doing, like, I don't know. I would rather almost just take the run with them and just have that be what it is. And just tell everybody, like, look, you know, whoever's best that night might end up with more ice time, but my plan is to pretty much play you all situationally an equivalent amount and just basically have the best blue line in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad, and I understand, like, I get what you're saying, where you can swap, you know, again, Lindholm comes off the power play, Chychrun takes his power play time, Lindholm goes onto the penalty kill, their ice time maybe doesn't change necessarily, like, minutes-wise or numbers-wise, and if it does, it drops a couple minutes, and it is what it is. I think in terms of you're bringing a player like Chychrun that's going to cost you as much as the rumored cost is out there, you're going to want to play him as much as you can, and Hampus Lindholm's case is I'm sure he wants to play as much as he can, and the way he's been playing, you want to play him as much as you can, and the way Fowler's been playing, you want to play him as much as you can and have him out there in as many situations as you can, and only so many guys can play so many minutes a night. So my concern is, you know, going out and acquiring a guy and not playing him as much as you can or should because you have so many other guys, and you know, you don't have to move another guy out, but I think just for the sake of, you know, roster continuity, like if it's a Manson or Shattenkirk, Manson's likely to get moved at some point anyway, regardless if the Ducks are going for it. Like Lindholm is probably the only guy you could argue to keep around and still lose in free agency because there maybe is a chance you re-sign him, or just his value to the team is so important that, you know, you want to keep him around for a playoff push. But I could see Manson, you know, being sacrificed, or even Shattenkirk, and maybe Shattenkirk's a make way. I know that the Ducks don't have to make the cap work. Both of these teams have just, you know, probably the most cap space of any teams in the entire league. But it could just be Shattenkirk goes back the other way. The Coyotes get another blue liner for the rest of this year and next to just have NHL players on their roster. The Ducks get Chychrun, and then, you know, to kind of fill that spot in their top six. And honestly, I know, you know, it goes against the lefty-righty, but I like, you know, a Chychrun-Benoit pairing more than I like a Chychrun-Shattenkirk pairing, right? Like, I just like the dynamic of that pairing a little bit more. But, yeah, I think eventually, like, it does have to correspond with somebody going the other way. The cap doesn't matter. I just think, you know, ice time-wise and the way you're using guys, somebody's got to get moved.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think that that's probably the most pragmatic approach. I just think, you know, given that it is the COVID season and, you know, we're seeing guys going in and out, you know, they seem pretty committed to not playing Josh Mahura for whatever reason. You know, they brought up Greg Patterson, and like, I would be perfectly fine if he never played another game again. He was pretty bad in the first few minutes last night. You know, so like for me, I just feel like the upside and the I don't know, just kind of the utility that it gives you as the sum of its parts is really great. And but yeah, like you're right. Like, so I guess my question, right, off the next way to look at this is, what are you looking at offering Arizona if you're the Ducks? And if you're Arizona, what is the minimum thing you're asking for? So like, I think a first round pick's obviously like
that's that has to be deal. And I would say so probably this ignoring year too. That, if you're Anaheim, yeah, you definitely absolutely want it to be this year too, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, 100%. You don't want to get one, give up your Connor Bedard ticket, but two, this is probably the year over the next three that like you're saying this is the most free money thing. You know, I think in a perfect world, you trade this one, keep next year, and then hopefully when you get to the 2024 draft, you're using that to add to what is maybe hopefully a contender.
Yeah. And I don't think you want to bank on this year being a for sure step forward, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like it is. And, I mean, obviously, Troy Terry is a completely different player this year. Zegras is going to get better next year. Same with Drysdale, sure. You don't want to bank on it yet. And all things point to the Ducks likely being a playoff team or just missing out this year. So I think you could maybe do a first-round pick and just lottery protect it and then have the choice of what you want to do. But, yeah, I would definitely say you would want this year's first.
Yeah, and, you know, I just think, you know, and this is also why I've kind of banged the drum about going out and getting Pavelski or Giroux this year is I don't know that I next year want to expect Getzlaf to be this good. I don't think that's fair to him, and I don't know if that's realistic. So I think for me, you know, if there is a way for this team to show right over the next month and a half before the deadline, which I think is in mid-March, early yep. March, you know, to show that they can really kind of make a real push and be in the playoff hunt, then I think that there's, I don't know, man. Like, I just feel like I almost would rather have 4 or 5 or 6 games in the worst case scenario of playoff experience for Zegras and Terry when they're kind of feeling themselves and you know, going into that playoff run than this year's 21st pick, you know, and that's probably not the best way to look at it from a value perspective, but I just think the experience that the players could get in basically just a free playoff round, I think would be really, really beneficial.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can definitely see that. We've kind of kicked around some different ideas of who would be some fun, either veterans or pending UFAs for the Ducks to add to still make a playoff push. I think in terms of adding Chychrun and what the potential cost to the Ducks is going to be, like we said, it starts with a first-round pick likely this year, and then you look at what Merrick said, a young player and a high-end prospect as other pieces of that. I think we've discussed this before in a couple podcasts ago when the Chychrun rumors first came up. The Ducks weren't a part of it. We looked at what it could cost to acquire him. I think like Pastuov and Zellweger were names we threw in there as kind of high-end mm-hmm. prospects. I think you can comfortably, if you're the Ducks, you say no chance to Zegras, Drysdale, McTavish. They're off the board.
I think the offer, right, it starts at Max Comtois and a first, and then you haggle over the prospect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, oh, sorry, go.
No, I was saying, and I would be comfortable with that. And I think if you're the Ducks, when you likely say the young player is going to be a forward, just the way the Ducks roster is constructed right now, and most of their young players mm-hmm. they have are forwards, I would be then more comfortable with that high-end prospect being a defenseman. As much as I love Olin Zellweger, if you bring in Jacob Chychrun, that's not to say there is no room for Olin Zellweger, but then you are committed to a future top three of Fowler, Chychrun, Drysdale. And, you know, again, Zellweger could be your four there, potentially, in the future. But I would be more inclined to a Thrun or a Zellweger than a Pastuov or a Perreault, even, of that nature, and try and keep some of those young forward prospects in the mix. But I think that's what you're likely looking at, yeah, is a Zellweger or a Perreault or a Pastuov, one of the Ducks' kind of top prospects after you get outside Mason McTavish.
So I want to jump ahead on our notes a little bit. Again, talking about a young player, and, you know, the one name we kind of have all looked at is Comtois.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
My question is should this be the year Anaheim looks at moving Isaac Lindstrom?
It could. Is this your hot take that you told me?
But because I think, you know, I've loved the way he's played this year. I thought he's taken a big step. I think he looks a lot better out there. He just looks more comfortable. But I still think his ceiling is a third line center. Like, I don't think that he's shown enough to think that he's going to be a surprise second line center.
Yeah. Like, is it safe to say this is kind of what he just could be? Is this it?
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? And like, if it's this, like, that's very useful and it's a very important player to have. But I think having Chychrun and Drysdale in your top four for the next 5 years is more valuable than having an above average third line center.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, I mean, look, like, frankly, the best case scenario is if Isaac Lindstrom turns into Henrique, we're in a good spot. You know, I mean, just that would be a huge, huge plus for me. And if that's the case, then I think I would rather have the Chychrun upside. And does the way that Isaac Lindstrom has played this year and looked a lot better, does that give Anaheim an opportunity to maybe maximize his value?
I think so. And I think, you know, the big question mark for me in this, the description that Jeff Merrick has given us of what the Coyotes are looking for, you know, high-end prospect, that's easy to kind of identify what that means. Like, it's a top one, two, three prospect in it, you know, top three prospect in that team's system. First-round pick, obvious. Young player is kind of vague, right? Like, is it a young player like, you know, Lindstrom or Comtois, who they've, you know, they haven't made their mark yet in the NHL, but they're there, you know, they're NHL players and there's, you know, some potential to get better from where they are. Or are we talking, you know, a young player just on the cusp who's still technically a prospect, a Perreault type, who has a little bit of a higher ceiling, but less NHL experience? Like, that's the big question mark. I would lean to probably the first one there, like a Comtois or a Lindstrom. So somebody they can kind of put into their roster immediately and make an impact. I think there's obviously some big interest in Maxime Comtois still in the way he's played since he came back, but I would, you know, it depends on the team, but I would imagine there's a lot of teams that are really high in Isaac Lindstrom, the way he's played this year. And if there's...
Which one would you rather give up?
I'd rather give up Isaac Lindstrom, because I just don't know what else there is beyond this from him. Where I still have some belief that Maxime Comtois can be, you know, a top six power forward, you know, a 20, 25 goal scorer, 50 point guy in the NHL. I think he still has that potential and he's looked a lot better since coming back. Hasn't put the puck in the back of the net yet, but it seems to be coming. And hopefully with, you know, Getzlaf coming back tonight, and if we finally get an extended run of Getzlaf, Comtois, and Terry, I think it's a matter of time before, you know, Comtois becomes a big part of that line too. But yeah, I would start to be more inclined to Isaac Lindstrom, because I think you can find that somewhere else, or you can draft that again, or you can find that in free agency and you can find somebody to do that. And not to say, you know, it's an immediate replacement, but Sam Steele can kind of do what Isaac Lindstrom is doing right now. If you look at next year, or if you have Adam Henrique who comes back in the lineup, he could slot right into that spot and do that right now.
Oh, you're making me regret bringing this up. You're making me regret.
Lindstrom has been better than Sam Steele by mile this year, but I'm saying the drop off isn't immense that you're like, oh my god, what are we gonna do, right? And whereas, who are you going to replace Maxime Comtois with right now versus who you're going to replace Isaac Lindstrom with at the middle of the ice? Like, that's kind of where I'm getting at with that, and I think the way Milano has played this year, and I think you like Milano playing with Zegras on the left side. You've got Comtois, you know, you got Tracy potentially Pastrov coming up. I just think it's a little bit easier to move on from Lindstrom in my belief, but I think for both the Ducks could make a case for either, and the Ducks being willing to move either of them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this point in the season, Lundstrom has 8 goals and 10 assists, so he's at a half a point a game. And, like, I mean, yeah, like, 15-ish goals in a season seems about right for him. And if that's the case, you know, then, like you said, Comtois seems to have 25-plus goal potential, you know, and he just adds a nice physical dynamic to, you know, the top six. I think there's a very strong argument to be made that capitalizing on the season Lundstrom's having, and kind of the kind of like free boost that comes with how Anaheim as a whole is playing, and he's playing big minutes and playing consistently for them. I just think there's maybe an opportunity to get the most out of him in a trade right now. And again, like I've loved Lundstrom since the prospect game in I think Vegas is the year it was. Like I just like the way he plays. He's turned into a player that I like. You know what I mean? He's kind of developed exactly as I've hoped. But at the same time, I think if you're talking about bringing in a Chychrun or, you know, another like player, right? A definitive top four, top six player, top six forward, top four winger, defenseman. Like, I just think it's definitely worth considering, you know, because you do have McTavish coming up. And you can always take another center. And you can find a third or left third line center in free agency if you have to. You know, so I just think it creates a very interesting opportunity. And I just was curious where you stood on it.
Part of me just feels like the Kings are going to be the team that pulls this off. I don't know why. It feels like missing out on Eichel. I know the Ducks were further in on Eichel than the Kings were, but the Kings have been looking to make a big splash, and I think they have the same amount of good assets that the Ducks do to be able to pull this off. But you think, you know, first round pick and Alex Turcotte and, you know, a Kent Bay or an Iafallo or, you know, Bjorn Fraud or something.
The Kings
like
need this more than Anaheim, right?
Yeah, they do, to have a left-handed defenseman.
They don't have anybody
left. I mean, I don't even know who their top pairing left-handed defenseman would be right now, but I guess it'd be like Alex Edler when he's healthy is their top lefty, or you know, whoever's, I guess, playing with Doughty when Doughty's actually in the lineup is their top lefty. It makes sense that they're in on it. The Blues, maybe not so much. I don't know how they're going to fit him in there. It's like almost an embarrassment of riches for them at that point, but I think when it comes down to it, like Anaheim and LA have to be two of the most interested teams in getting Jacob Chychrun. When you look at their development curve of their teams and where they are right now, adding a player like that at 23 who makes just 4.6 for the next 3 years is huge for both of those teams' windows. So it could come down to either Anaheim or LA where he ends up landing. And I think it's a pretty even matchup. Like I think the Kings have a bit more variety in terms of prospects they could offer. When you look at just, you know, they have a bit more centers. If Coyotes wanted centers, then you go to LA and you've got, you know, kind of a pick of four or five different guys. If you want Kupari or Turcotte, I don't know, Byfield's obviously off the table for that discussion. But
yeah,
with the Kings, you have that, you know you have Byfield, so you can maybe move on from a Kupari or Turcotte and go out and get something, you know, a position of need at the left side of defense. And if you're Anaheim, I think you might have the better young players to offer up, you know, guys who are a bit more NHL ready, and you have some freedom to move them out in a Lundstrom or Comtois. And the first round picks kind of wash each other out at that point, and it just comes down to essentially what the Coyotes are looking for, what type of player they're looking for, right, at the end of the day. And I wouldn't be surprised when the deal eventually gets done and we get down to kind of the final three teams. I wouldn't be surprised to see both Anaheim and LA were kind of in it to the end.
Yeah,
they've seen a lot of him too. They've seen a lot of Chychrun over the last couple of years. So,
yeah, no, he would be huge for them. The other team I think that would need to make a phone call would be Ottawa, for obvious reasons. They need just good players. But yeah, no, he would be huge for LA. But shit, if you find out Turcotte's available, I'm calling.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, I'll give you Lindholm for Turcotte.
We'll get Turcotte and Zegras back together.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, I just think the Chychrun thing's interesting. And we talk a lot about trades and stuff, and they're fun and stuff. But I also think they provide kind of an interesting or unique opportunity to kind of gauge what you think of the team, because it's all value, which means it's all relative and subjective. Like, we can objectively look at certain players being better, but there becomes contract issues or age concerns or things like that, or health concerns or things like that, that complicate the picture or make it less simple. And I think, when you have a team like Anaheim who's having this kind of crazy out of nowhere year, looking at bringing in veteran players versus bringing in a young player, right? I think having an opportunity to go get a guy like Chychrun's almost a no-brainer just because of his age, his contract, his upside. But like you said, there's likely a complementary move that requires you to move out someone else who's probably been a big part of this team for a while. Whether that's Lindholm, whether that's Manson. I mean, hell, even if it's Shattenkirk, the kind of year that he's been having, he's really, stepped up and been a big part of what this team has done.
It kind of becomes the guy who becomes the most expendable from Chychrun coming in is Shattenkirk, right? Because Shattenkirk's big value right now is he's a power play option for the Ducks. I think he's on power play 2 right now, or maybe he's on power play 1. I know the line has been shifted around with Lindholm not being in the lineup right now, but he is primarily a power play option for the Ducks, and Chychrun comes in and eats up most of that space, and then Drysdale is still going to get power play time. I think you could convince Arizona again to bring Shattenkirk back, and again, he takes Chychrun's place on their power play and plays with potentially Gostisbehere and another guy you could flip either this year or next year and get some more assets for. And it's just a warm body going back the other way. Like, I think you could convince them to do that, and maybe you add another pick to kind of sweeten the deal for them to take that contract, or they just like the player enough to bring him in. But it's the one that makes the most sense. But then even then, I still think Manson ends up getting moved, or should end up getting moved no matter what, even if Shattenkirk was to go the other way in a Chychrun deal. I still think Manson should be moved. I think Lindholm, again, is the only one you could argue you could keep for the rest of the year and then lose for nothing. But somebody would have to definitely make way.
I mean, hell, if you have the opportunity for Chychrun to play as offside, do you look at extending Manson and just going, or not Manson, Lindholm, and just taking an off pair, a double lefty pair in either your first or second pair? You play him with either Fowler or with Lindholm. Like, I just think he's of an obvious skill that playing on his offside probably wouldn't be as detrimental to him as it would be to a lot of other players. And we've seen Vegas have success, and different teams have had success with 2 lefties or 2 righties or whatever it is. Like, I'm pretty sure Ekblad and Weegar are both right-handed. And I'm pretty sure they're still playing together. So, it just is what it is. But I just wonder if you can get Chychrun for the next 3 years at 4.6, and you can get Lindholm for the next 6 at 6.5-7, like, that doesn't seem like the worst idea.
No, and you have the cap room to make it work too, right? And the time before other players are needing deals to fit them in and make a run with them and figure it out, later down the road. And again, you could potentially move Manson out to another team and bring something back to make this team competitive this year, or go out and, again, like we said, explore, some of the UFAs out there, or, looking at a team like Philadelphia, who maybe it makes sense for them to bring in a player like Josh Manson and move out a player like James Van Riemsdyk, which we've talked about before, and swapping some cap hits around and using the cap flexibility that the Ducks have. And, there's been rumors that the Golden Knights have been interested in Kessler's LTIR space. So again, you could use that as some flexibility to move in a deal as well, to get some assets back in return or sweeten the pot in the deal too. So there is some interesting ways the Ducks could kind of enter the trade deadline and use some non-traditional assets to get some players in.
Okay, so let's jump to that real quick, since we're in the fantasy trade land anyways. If you're Solomon, right, who at this point has the executive power to make trades, what are you asking Vegas for? Because you kind of have all the leverage, right? Because they need, one way or another, to create usable cap space to put together this perfect lineup that they've tried to build. Like, Is it? Like, is it going to get you a first? I don't think it is.
I mean, the thing is that you don't know because there's no track record, essentially, to this type of transaction where, you know, the how valuable almost $7 million in cap space is to a team mm-hmm. like Vegas right now, the situation they're in. Like, it's valuable to any team, but for Vegas just to literally put their roster together the way they want, to have Pacioretty and Eichel and Stone and everybody right. play together and not have to move out a big contract. Riley Smith has been good. Like, I don't think they want to lose him if they don't have to, at least for this year, to try and make a run with the team they have. Like, you know, I know Kessler's contract expires at the end of this year, so it is essentially you get one this run of almost $7 million over the cap to use. But you look at how valuable it was to a team like Tampa Bay heading into the playoffs and being able to acquire all those players and just keep Kucherov on LTIR until the playoffs, right? So it is right. valuable, and it has worked, and there's proof that, like, you know, having this space and utilizing it that way works and can be successful for teams. And if you're Vegas, you think, okay, we could use this not only to just get all of our players and not have to move anybody, but potentially have some extra space to add to this roster. The value on that is I would say, pretty high. But the problem is we don't have any, you know, kind of track record to look back on and say, okay, this is what this normally gets you. I would say in Vegas's case, that's a late first. So, you know, it's Vegas would hope it's a 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 overall pick, right? So
the other thing is that it can't be this year's, because this year's is technically lottery protected, right. And like, it is what it is. So like one way or the other, it has to start at the very least at next year. So even then they've got more time to, you know, jerk the roster around it. You know, so that probably makes it less valuable to them even still, because you can do things in the process to ensure that it finishes in that, you know, back five or yeah. whatever.
No, I would think though, like $7 million in cap space has a decent amount of value, especially for a team like Vegas. I don't know what it would get you. You know, whether it's their first round pick, or, you know, one of their kind of second, third tier prospects like a Brendan Brisson or somebody like that you could bring back. If I was the Ducks and I was, you don't have to move it, right? And you don't want to help a team right. necessarily in your division unless it's going to help you. I wouldn't move it unless you're getting something decent in return for it. You might as well just keep it at that point and tell Vegas to kick rocks and, you know, figure it out yourself and let them weaken their roster rather than have them get a good chance for them to win the Stanley Cup. But, you know, it makes sense for Vegas that they're looking at this creative ways for them to get around the cap, because they're going to need it. And Anaheim has not only a lot of cap flexibility, just having a ton of cap space to begin with, but having that contract and knowing this player is not going to come back, and the fact that I would imagine right now it's one of the highest value LTIR contracts out there, that there should be a lot of teams interested in acquiring that contract and using it, which would put, I would assume, a high value on that.
Yeah, I mean, like we were joking about last episode, it's going to be the 10th highest cap hit, like, coming off the books this summer. Like, there is definitely going to be value there, you know? And, like, you know, like, I wonder, like, do Vegas try to get somebody, like, do you take Evgeny Dadonov back? Like, you know, to still help with some of that cap space, you know, because if you free up $5 million in player cap space in return for an almost $7 million contract that's definitely LTIR, like that's moving out good money right there. Like that's making, you know, I think that's probably like a net positive as far as like cap it and stuff like that. You're gaining extra cap it
there. Yeah,
you know, but Dadonov has 9 goals and 8 points. Like, you know, he hasn't been great, but he hasn't been bad. He's at about half of a point a game. You know, I just think it's going to be interesting. And so, like you said, I do think the correct mood is to tell him, basically, you give us what we want or else, because you don't want to be one of those dumb teams that helps somebody out for nothing. And, you know, you could have, I mean, just be petty. You're an NHL team.
Well, yeah,
petty.
And
make them pay through the
nose. Again, Anaheim is in that position where, you know, if they wanted to even get more out of the deal and bringing back Evgeny Dadonov, not only does that help the Ducks and their cause this year, and bringing in a player who could potentially help them, you know, the Golden Knights at the end of the day have to bring $15.25 million off the LTIR into the roster right now, because Eichel makes 10 and Alec Martinez makes 5.25. They only have currently $4.9 million in cap space. So they need to basically free up another 10. And you think, okay, you bring in Kessler's LTIR space of almost 7 and you lose Dadonov, there's your, you know, over $10 million right there, and you have a little bit of flexibility to work with. So there's not many teams out there, I think, who could offer you both of those and help that. And if you're Vegas, I think, you, like I said, you want to keep Riley Smith. He's one of the leaders on the team. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's been really good this year. You don't really want to lose that. There's nobody else in this roster that makes a ton of money that you can really afford to lose. So it really is just Dadonov. And, you know, unless there's another team who wants to take Dadonov and then you take the Kessler contract, if you can do it in one deal, I think they'd rather do that. Yeah, and it puts Anaheim in an interesting position where they've kind of got all the cards and all the leverage in a deal like that.
Would Anaheim have any interest in Patrick Nolan? Or Nolan Patrick? Jesus, Steven. Look how the club works. I think I'd never read a cap-friendly page before. Do you think Nolan Patrick's a player they'd be interested in taking a flyer on?
I would think so. I couldn't imagine.
1.2, he's 23.
I couldn't imagine that Vegas, after giving up Cody Glass to get him, would love having to give him up. It's not like he's lit it up since going to Vegas. He's got 3 points in 9 games. But, you know, I think any team would be interested in a former, you know, second overall pick who's only 23 years old to potentially bring him in and see what he could do. And if you're the Ducks, if it means you're, you know, you just lost Lindstrom in going out and acquiring Jacob Chychrun, then maybe you bring in Nolan Patrick to be, you know, that third line center and replacement. He's just kind of a nice extra piece of another deal to bring in and add to your roster. So it gives them a lot of flexibility, I think, to do a lot of different things at this deadline, whether it's adding and selling. I think they could potentially do both, right? Like, they're in a position where they have some expiring contracts and they have different things that they can move out. But at the meantime, they also are in a good spot. Second in the Pacific Division, could make a run in a weak division. Like, the only team I'd be scared of playing from our division in the playoffs would probably be Vegas. I would give the Ducks a shot against Calgary, against Edmonton, against Vancouver, the Kings, anybody like that. So, you know, they're in a position where they could acquire players like we've talked about and still make a run. So it'd be really interesting.
I mean, look, the worst case scenario is they get stuck in they fall to a wild card spot and flip to having to play whoever's at the top of the Central, which will probably destroy them.
Minnesota or Colorado or somebody like that. Yeah, that's the worst case scenario. You got to finish in one of the top three Pacific Division spots. You don't not want to play one of the top teams from the Central. That would be a nightmare.
Just get run over by Colorado. Jesus.
Yeah, that's brutal. There's a couple of things I wanted to mention before we kind of wrap up the show here and kind of briefly talk about tonight's game and the upcoming games. Mason McTavish was reportedly traded from the Peterborough Petes to the Hamilton Bulldogs in the OHL. This is something we talked about before the World Juniors and kind of expected it to happen at some point. And with the OHL trade deadline coming up, no surprise. But Peterborough has been a bit of a surprise this year, but are not a great team in the Ontario Hockey League this year. And, you know, they're going to try and get assets for a player who's likely going to be with the Ducks full-time next year. So McTavish goes to one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. It's going to be their first line center. It's great for him. Going to love to see him play with some better players. Jan Misak, who is one of the Montreal Canadiens' top prospect, plays for the Bulldogs. So it'll be fun to see if they get paired together. But I think McTavish's first game potentially could be Tuesday with Hamilton, unless a lot more of those games get postponed, as NHL games have, so of Ontario Hockey League games have been getting postponed. But it'll be fun to see how he does, because it's a really good opportunity for him to step in and finish the year strong, play on a good team, and prove that, you know, he already has proved even more that he's one of the best players not playing in the National Hockey League right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's on the short list, apparently, for Canada's Olympic team. You know, he's getting it traded to a contender at the OHL deadline. Like, you know, at this point, if you're Anaheim, every game that he's playing, since he's going to be playing them anyways, that's just naturally more meaningful as a benefit. You know, the better the teams that he's playing for, the better the teams he's playing against, the more important the games he's playing in are. Like, you know, at that point, that's all you want, is you just want him to keep playing in these games that mean something a little bit more. Instead of, you know, playing out the season and not making the playoffs. Although I guess, you know, depending on the timing and stuff, maybe you're fine with that, because then you can call him back up sooner or something after probably moving out a couple of players.
Yeah, so. No, I was looking at it, and I was like, okay, well, you know, even if their season ends a little bit early, maybe he can come up for a goals playoff run. And then I looked at where the goals were in the standings, and I was like, ah, I don't think that's going to happen this year, unfortunately. So maybe it is a black ace for the Ducks. Or can he do that, technically?
That's what I was just wondering. Like, I don't know if he can do that, but, like, if the OHL season's over, then I don't think it technically, like, violates the understanding.
Yeah, I think he would have to – it would have to be playoffs, right? Because if he plays another regular season game, then he would burn the year in his entry-level contract because he would essentially have played 10 games this year, right? So that's the line they're dancing. I don't – playoff games don't count to that because, remember, Cale Makar came up for the Avs and played, you know, 10 or so playoff games for them, and that was fine. But, yeah, I think – they wouldn't want him, or I don't even know if he'd be eligible to play another regular season game for the Ducks, but it wouldn't make sense for them to have sent him back to avoid that, to only have him come up and play games later on. But potentially, if the Ducks are in the playoffs, he'd be a nice addition to add in. If he could do that without them having to worry about those contract issues, it would be nice to see that, especially if he's coming off you know, having a good run, hopefully, with Canada at the Olympics, and then a good playoff run with Hamilton in the OHL. I mean, the experience that McTavish has had over the last 18 months has just been unbelievable, playing pretty much everywhere, bouncing around from pro leagues overseas to the NHL, the AHL, you know, obviously the Ontario Hockey League, the World Juniors, the under-18s, now potentially the Olympics. Like, this guy has pretty much played everywhere. I think it was Scott Wheeler who put out a tweet, but, like, the last player to, like, play in all these different places as a prospect was like Eric Lindros to play, you know, Olympics and World Championships and World Juniors and pro and overseas and everything. So it's pretty good company to be in, being compared to Lindros. Not to say McTavish is going to be the next Eric Lindros, but he's looked pretty impressive, to say the least. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Again, like, that's just also, you know, I think that's been the overarching theme of this season. It's just how much positive there is to take away from a handful of these young players. You know, there's still question marks around some of them. Like, we still don't know what Steele is. We still don't, you know, like we said, we still aren't 100% sure what Lundestrom is. You know, Terry has been a revelation. Zegras has looked great. Milano's been huge. You know, Drysdale's been wonderful. As far as I'm concerned. So, like, for me, you know, having that other thing of being like, oh, yeah, there's a dude who hasn't been on the team very much this year who's, like, also pretty good and should probably next year step into a top six role. Like, that's kind of crazy to me. And it's just, it's, you know, the outcome of this season notwithstanding, I think this has just been a pretty perfect season for Ducks fans because you can see what there is moving forward that this team has to be excited about. It doesn't feel completely intangible in the ways it does when they're just prospects. You know what I mean?
You see the timeline of when they're
tangible return.
When they're going to get here, and the fact that they've been playing so well at different levels, there's a little bit of a brighter light at the end of the tunnel. Let's get into a quick kind of talk about tonight's game, the upcoming games, and our predictions for this week. I feel like this Cam Fowler discussion that we keep putting off is like that bit on Jimmy Kimmel where they always say they're going to have Matt Damon on and he never comes on.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we were going to have Cam Fowler on and talk about his season this year, but yeah, just didn't have time. Going to have to push that to the next show for the third time now. But the Ducks play against the Detroit Red Wings tonight. We already talked about it a little bit, the Zegras versus Raymond and Sider. Getzlaff's back in the lineup tonight. How do you see tonight's game going? Detroit's had a tough go of it lately. They've kind of fallen a little bit back down to earth, but should be one the Ducks are the favorites for, no?
Yeah, I mean, if Gibby was healthy or not in protocol or whatever, I would say they're probably the favorite. With it being potentially docile, then you know, you just never know how that's going to go. Like, you know what I mean? He could come in and get shelled. So it'll be curious to see. But, like, I think this should be a competitive game. You know, I think that, you know, Dylan Larkin and Tyler Bertuzzi and, you know, those kinds of players are, you know, Detroit has the players to make a difference in the game. So, like, it just feels like it's just going to be a futures battle, right? Like, if anything, this is just like a preview of hopefully what'll be fun games in 3-4 years. So, you know, I would say I expect the Ducks to win, but I don't know how confident in that I am.
Yeah, well, we don't even know. Like, it's likely a Lucas Dostal start. I can't imagine it would be, like, Gibby's not ready. We know that. What has not been taken out of COVID protocol because he was just put in there a couple of days ago. And I highly doubt they would go to a back-to-back Stoloy start. However, we have seen that before from the Ducks where I think Gibson has played a back-to-back start despite them having a backup goalie. But I can't remember who it was, but they had a goaltender who just was they didn't feel was ready. And we've seen Gibson have those back-to-back starts before. I would imagine it is Dostal tonight, which I don't want to say puts the Ducks at odds and makes it less likely they're going to win, but it does throw that question up into the air. Like, it's a goaltender's National Hockey League debut. Highly touted one, but still one that hasn't played pro hockey at this level. So I would still give my favorite to the Ducks tonight. I would say they win. I think it'll be a bit closer game than it was for Detroit and LA last night where they lost 4-0. But I would still give the edge to the Ducks. Do you think we see both a Dostal and Tracy debut tonight? That things seem to be lining up that way.
Yeah, I'm looking at the updates from the Athletic app with Stevens, and he says, appears all systems are go for tonight's rescheduled Ducks game against Detroit. As of now, no new positive tests for Anaheim. Team did not have morning skate. Won't know if it'll be Stolarz or Dostal in net. I think Tracy's probably a no. I think three games in 3 nights is pretty hard, especially because if that's what they wanted, why wouldn't you just play Perreault 2 nights in a row? But I think it makes 100% sense to give both of them the night off. I don't think that, you know, they kind of need that. But I think it's good to give Tracy a chance to kind of just be around the team and, you know, watch from the box or whatever.
I think the interesting thing for Tracy is obviously with the COVID protocols in place now, there is a taxi squad, and he was called directly up to the roster, was not called up to the taxi squad. I think that's the only thing that I think is like giving people some idea that maybe he will make his debut tonight. Because if you said, okay, like, we're just going to call him up, we don't have a morning skate anyway, but we want him to be around the team and watch and everything, and, you know, we're going to give him a chance to kind of just be on the taxi squad and hang around. But the fact that, you know, Perreault was sent directly back down, I think so was Buddy Robinson, and then Tracy called directly up to the roster. That I hope so. I would love to see him. But yeah, 3 games in 3 nights would be tough, especially for a guy playing as many minutes as he does in San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a big part of that team. You know, you don't want to jeopardize that so he can come up and, you know, play 10 minutes for the Ducks tonight. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's just better to have him around the team for now and see if he's ready to go come Tuesday.
Speaking of which, we got Tuesday at home against Pittsburgh, Friday in Minnesota, Saturday in Chicago. What are your predictions for the 3 games next week?
Lose to Pittsburgh, lose to Minnesota, beat Chicago. Those are just tough teams, man. Like, it's not even anything I feel badly. Like, I feel down on the Ducks. It's just those are two really good teams.
Yeah, and Minnesota's winning games without what's his name? Without Eric Sinek right now. But I think Eric Sinek has just been activated from the IR and cleared to come back for Friday against Anaheim, which which is not a good sign. And then Kaprizov, they're still waiting on an update from him, but he entered the IR at the same time as Eric Sinek, so he would be eligible to come off for their next game, which is Friday against Anaheim. I think both their upcoming games are postponed this week. They're supposed to play Winnipeg tomorrow and Edmonton on Wednesday. Both are postponed, so they're out of action as of yesterday until Friday. So a lot of rest for all of them. We could see a fully healthy Wild team, which is going to be not a lot of fun.
Healthy and potentially with Rossi and Boldy on the roster. That's and those two guys, like. Well, whatever. And
Pittsburgh's 10 or 11 game winning streak. Did they lose the other day?
Yeah, they lost. They lost to Dallas yesterday.
So their 10 game winning streak came to an end. But they're not a team you want to face right now. And as the Ducks know, they got stumped by Casey DeSmith back on December 11th when they lost 1-0. So that's it's gonna be a tough one. I would probably tend to be in the same boat as you. I'd love to be a bit more optimistic and give the Ducks a bit more credit, but those are two really tough teams to face right now, the way Pittsburgh's playing and the way Minnesota's playing, especially if they're going to get, like we said, with Minnesota, the players back that they are. And then, you know, playing in Chicago is always tough, but I would give the Ducks, especially if they lose the first two, some credit, some hope that they'd be able to bounce back at the end of the week there and beat Chicago. Chicago's not really a great team this year, so I'll go 1-1-2, and maybe one of those Pittsburgh Minnesota games they get a point out of, squeak out an overtime game or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, right, like you expect them to win tonight or at least get a point, right? Like, let's just say you expect them to win. Then you drop a game to Pittsburgh, you drop a game to Minnesota, you come back and you beat Chicago. That's, you had 500 on the week. And then on top of that, like you said, hopefully you can take one of those games with Pittsburgh or Minnesota to overtime, at which point it becomes a shootout. Maybe you pick up a win in shootout, or you pick up a win in 3-on-3 because of a broken play or something like that. But at the very minimum, you're going to get that extra point, which at this point is matters because they're kind of falling down the standings a little bit. And, you know, they got to pick up as many points as they can because they don't necessarily have the games in hand that a lot of the teams behind them do.
Once Calgary starts and have actually playing some games, they're going to pick up the like 6 or 7 games in hand that they have on everybody else. So.
Yeah, like if this season comes out 2-1-1, then I am all over the place today. If, you know, come Sunday morning between this Sunday and next Saturday, they go 2-1-1, that's a huge week for me. Like, I think that's perfectly fine. Nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough week. But Gibby should be back out of COVID protocol. Lindholm should be back at some point as well. So the Ducks are going to get some players back that are essentially healthy, but they're just, because of COVID protocols, they can't play. So it'll be nice to get these guys back into the lineup and presumably have a fully healthy lineup. I think the only player still injured is Henrik, right? I think he's the only one still dealing with an injury. And then obviously Max Jones. So it'll be nice to see those guys back in a fully healthy roster, because we talked about that a little bit, and the Ducks being able to roll out Getzlaf, come to Terry, Lundestrom, Raquel Silfverberg, Zegras Milano, and kind of whoever they want to put on that line. Will, or I guess if Henrik comes back, it would be back to Zegras Milano, Raquel, Henrik, Lundestrom, Silfverberg. It would be nice to see, hopefully, a healthy roster, and give the Ducks a better chance, I think, against obviously teams like Pittsburgh and Minnesota.
Yeah, Gibson is in protocol, Terry is in protocols. Everybody's in protocols, and Henrik is slated to return until after Christmas. So
potentially soon, maybe this week.
Sounds about right.
The taste is we're beating Pittsburgh because Gibson is not going to be, or Gibby's going to be rested. I thought he originally said because Gibby's not going to play in that game.
That's what I would have expected him to say, because I just, for some reason, man, Gibby plays the Pens terribly.
Yeah. One of those things. Well, usually it's in Pittsburgh he plays them terribly, but this one will be in Anaheim, so maybe it's a bit of a different story.
Yeah, home field advantage, let's go. This should be a fun week. All the games should be good. Tonight's game should be fun just because of the skill. The game against Pittsburgh and the game against Minnesota should be fun because they're two good teams, you know, with good players and exciting players to watch. And then hopefully we can beat the shit out of Chicago and feel good about ourselves going into the weekend.
It's a good one to end the week with, especially as long as we get the win. I don't want to come out of a loss against Chicago.
I'll tell you what, man. If we lost all three games going into Chicago and then beat Chicago 5-0, it would feel worth it.
Yep, vindicated.
Oh, that would just feel so good. Stupid team.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Appreciate you guys coming out, anybody who did come live. And I am going to be posting this before tonight's game, so hopefully you maybe had a chance to listen to it in the small window here before the end of recording.
Really made sure you had homework.
Before this game. If not, thanks for listening either way. We'll be back next weekend with another weekly show. Hopefully the boys should be able to join us for that one. All things planned, we hope so. Jason will hopefully be feeling better, and Pat will hopefully be able to join that one, but we'll see when we get to it. We are well overdue, anybody who is a Patreon member, for Patreon episodes. Steven and I have a long list of ideas that we're working to put together, and I think we'll probably have time to record one middle of the week this week, hopefully, and at least get something out. We have to kind of cherry pick one of our ideas here and figure out which one we want to do and get that set up, but we'll have a new episode coming out for that. Anybody that is in the Discord or isn't, make sure you join the Discord for one, but we'll post whenever we're going to record a show in there and let you guys know what the details are behind that. So appreciate everybody's patience. We're going to get to that as soon as we can. Same with Ducks Morning Brew, with Ontario here going into another kind of semi-lockdown. It means kids have been put home from school, so I haven't been able to record that. So hoping to get back to those once everything kind of goes a bit back to normal near the end of January. So Ducks Morning Brew should hopefully get kicked back up by early February at the latest to bring that one back, because I'm missing doing that show. It's fun to do those in the morning, but Doug Ford had other plans for everybody in Ontario here. So I was supposed to go see the Ducks play Ottawa too at the end of January, and that's like, that looks, the Sens haven't played a game in like 3 or 4 weeks, so I don't think that one's gonna happen either.
Oh my god, yeah, it's the whole thing's a mess. We were gonna even get into that today and we just don't have time. So everybody have a good week. Hopefully, like we said, the games go well enough for us. We get a couple good breaks in the middle of the week and then kick Chicago's ass on Saturday, and maybe get Sunday morning show feeling pretty good. So
all right, take care everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.